Well, if you have your Bibles with you, I invite you to turn to Matthew chapter 5. Beginning in 38 through 42, we spoke about this last week. This is part two of a message on this text. We're going to read those verses, and then we're going to come back and keep reading in verses 43 on to the end. We'll get to that in just a minute. But let's pick up from last week, Matthew 5, verse 38. Ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will sue thee at the law, and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him too. Give to him that asketh of you, and from him that would borrow of you, turn not thou away. If you've been tracking with us along this series on the Sermon on the Mount, you're going to know that some of the lessons are hard. And this text, I think, is another in a line of some hard lessons that Jesus is teaching and explaining to us here on the Sermon on the Mount. There's an old Scottish preacher by the name of Alexander White. Alexander White lived in the early 1900s. He almost lost his arm when he was a little boy. In fact, they thought they'd have to amputate it. But a very nice neighbor lady promised that if she could take care of little Alexander, that she would like to try to nurse him and his arm back to health. And so that's what she did. Along the way, as the arm was beginning to heal, there was a tremendous amount of pain that this young boy was feeling in that arm as it was beginning to heal. And Alexander said this, that his nurse neighbor, his nice neighbor lady, would say to him over and over again, she'd say, "I like the pain. I like the pain." And the idea was that the pain told her that the feeling was returning in that arm, and the feeling meant that the arm was healing. Later on in his preaching ministry, as Alexander White would preach on some difficult topics, he would say to his congregation, he would say, "I like the pain. I like the pain." And that's a little bit of the idea of sometimes how I feel when I approach the Scripture, and I felt this a lot in the Sermon on the Mount. I mean, there's a lot of Jesus' teaching in here that really challenges the way that I think. And it digs into some of the areas of my life that I don't really want touched. And if you feel that when you come to church, sort of this idea that, man, it feels a little bit painful, some of that is good because that means that God's doing something. He's digging at some things. It's sort of like, if I think back on my old the old athletic days, it's sort of like a really hard basketball practice. And if you don't like the pain a little bit, you're going to quit. But there's a little bit of process in that. It's like, I like the pain because I know that in this pain, something good is happening that's going to prepare me. So that's how I feel about the Sermon on the Mount. I think that's a little bit of what we're tracking as we move through here. We've been asking a question. We started this last week. What is a Christian supposed to do when we are wronged? What is a Christian supposed to do when we are treated unfairly? When we're cheated or when we're taken advantage of? When we feel like we've been used? We feel like our rights have been violated. And Jesus is answering this in a couple of different ways. We looked at two of them. I'm going to review them quickly out of the verses we just read, and then we're going to go on to one more here this morning in the following verses. So his answer comes through in these three areas. Number one, we're going to have to do battle with the tendencies of our dog-eat-dog mentality. And we tried to explain a little bit of what that concept of dog-eat-dog means. It's just a term that we use trying to find the best way to describe a situation in which people will do anything to be successful, even if it means hurting other people. And if you were here last week, you're catching this. Even if not, you understand this. I mean, this is kind of how our society is wired. Look out for number one. Do what you need to do. And Jesus' teaching says we're going to have to go to battle with that mentality. Number two, we're going to have to release our grip on our personal rights. And this is a hard one. Because again, this is not how we're wired, and it's certainly not how we're trained. And in the verses that we just read, we're given these four little cameos that we looked at last week from four different life situations, each of them kind of detailing what living for Christ should really look like. And so when we talk about this, how are we going to, release our grip on our personal rights? I think this text tells us these things. First, verses 38 and 39, Jesus talks about responding to personal insult. And the application is, I must release my right to retaliation. Verse 39, whoever shall smite you on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. Try to talk about what it means and what a Christian is to do in this area of retaliation. Second, Jesus talks about responding to a violation of my rights. And the application that we made was this, or I think Jesus made, is that I must release my right to cling to what is fair. Verse 40, and if any man will sue thee at thy law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. All right, we just talked about this scenario. I mean, the law said that you could sue somebody and take their coat, take the shirt off their back. But you could not take away their cloak. It was essential for their good. And so you couldn't do that. And what Jesus said is, don't fight for your rights. And this can't be the key part of your life. Even though you have every legal right, I don't want you fighting for this. The third, Jesus talks about responding to unfair treatment or unreasonable demands. And the application that we made is that I must release my right to be in control or to get my way. You remember from verse 41, it talks about this scenario where if you're compelled to go 1 mile, you should actually go with them too. And we talked about the scenario that was taking place with the Roman soldiers and Roman authorities. And again, Jesus' teaching was don't fight for your rights to be in control. Even if somebody treats you unfairly, your response is really to go out of your way to respond to them. Then the last one, Jesus talks about responding to being used. And the application is, I must release my right to the mine syndrome. Verse 42, give to him that asks thee, and from him that would borrow from you, turn not thou away. So we just talked about this idea that Jesus describes this generosity of spirit that has to be prevalent in our lives, even with some that may ask of us that we may not be anxious to give to. And so all of these things together, we list them and we think, wow, this is hard. This isn't how I see life going. This isn't the way that I was trained. And we gave some qualifiers. I mean, we talked about the idea that there are limits and we must take other biblical principles into account. There's a place for humble appeals, and all of that was part of our discussion. And if you're interested in that, you can go back to the video, to the live stream from last Sunday and catch up to where we're at. The third principle that I think we find leading from the verses we just read and then really picking up strong beginning in verse 43 is this. We're going to have to respond with grace when it's the last thing that we want to do or it's the last thing that we feel like doing. Let's keep reading. Verse 43. You've heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. Actually, let me stop for just a minute. Interestingly, this text is found back in Leviticus 19 and verse 18. And the interesting thing about that is the Old Testament text actually doesn't say the hate thy neighbor part. It does say the first part, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. It says thou shalt love thy neighbor, but it doesn't say and hate thine enemy. What had happened is the Pharisees had added that part to it. And so when Jesus says, you have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt, you know, love thy neighbor, that's from the Old Testament, the book of Leviticus. But then he adds this other part that had really become part of their, you know, religious thinking, and hate thine enemy. So let's go on and see what Jesus says about that. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love them which love you, what reward have you? Do not even the publicans the same? And if you salute your brethren only, what do you more than others? Do not even the publicans so? Be therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. This again is amazing teaching. To the man on the street, the idea of loving your enemies is crazy. I mean, it's absurd. But that's exactly what Jesus challenges us with. He says, don't just tolerate those who are evil to you. He says, you turn around and you bless them. You do good unto them. You love them. You pray for them. In fact, verse 44 is very descriptive. He's talking about your enemies, but it defines it in a couple of clear ways. Actually, there's a textual variant in this verse. Some of you, your translation may have just a very simplified translation of this verse. The King James gives a little bit more descriptive on it, but here's what it says as it defines your enemies. It talks about those that curse you. These are your enemies. Have you ever had anybody curse you? I'm not talking about because you cut them off, you know, when you're driving down the road. You might have, well, not to be cursed, but that's not what I'm talking about. I mean, have you ever had anybody, you know, kind of curse you for your faith or for your stand for Christ? Talks about those that hate you and those that despitefully use you and persecute you. That's the definition of that Jesus gives of our enemies. Some time back, I read a story about a tough platoon sergeant. At one time, he'd lived a really rough kind of, cursing, drinking, swearing, partying lifestyle. He was very arrogant and rude towards those that were around him and towards his soldiers. A story that I was reading said, but he had become a Christian, and when he became a Christian, like, his whole life turned around. It was such a dramatic turnaround, and somebody asked him, you know, what was it that produced such a dramatic change in your life? Why did you go from really cursing God to, you know, a person whose life's changed because of God? And he told the story about a private that was in his platoon that was a Christian. And he was a very courageous young guy, and a lot of the other soldiers were pretty hard on him and gave him a very difficult time, and he just continued to courageously stand up for Jesus. One night, this private came back. It was a rainy night, and it was very late, and he came back to the barracks, and just before he went to bed, like he would normally do, he actually kneeled down beside his bed and prayed. And the sergeant was sort of, you know, across the room, and he picked up his boot, his muddy boot that he'd been wearing during the day, and he threw it across the room. And I don't know if he just meant to scare him a little bit, or maybe he thought it would be funny to kind of shock him, but what actually happened is he hit him on the side of the head with his boot, and this private didn't say anything. In fact, he kind of wiped the mud off his face and he went to bed. The next morning, the sergeant woke up to find his boots that had been cleaned and polished and were sitting beside his bed. And he said that was the moment that God broke his heart. Because why would somebody do something like that? Why would somebody respond in a way like that to somebody else who had been harsh and rude and difficult? Who does stuff like that? It's not natural. So, Christian, is this how you operate? You say, but man, I don't think I could do that. You don't understand some of the people in my life. I don't know how anybody could love them. I don't think their mama loves them. Or, you don't know what they've done to me. You don't know how they've hurt me. You don't understand how they've used me. Maybe they've cheated you or they've lied to you. And you say, I've tried to overcome sort of my anger and my bitterness towards them, but I can't. This is an enemy and I hate them. I just don't think that I could ever have warm feelings for that person because of what they have done to me. If I can just help you a little with this, you've probably heard that the Bible uses three different words for love. And Jesus does not ask us here to love our enemies in the same way that we love our loved ones. There are people to whom we have kind of a spontaneous, very natural, instinctive love. There are people in our lives that it's easy to love. We don't have to make any effort to love them. We just do. It's just natural. That's not the word that Jesus is talking about. He's not using the word for romantic love or buddy love or family love or emotional love. There's some other words in the original language that are defined love, and that's not what he's saying here. What he commands us is an agape love. It is a deliberate, determined love, and it's different from everything else. It's not a feeling-oriented love. It's more of a choice-oriented. It is a deliberate, determined love. And you say, well, how am I going to do that? I don't have any feelings. In fact, all my feelings are negative. How's this going to turn? Even if I try to do something good towards this person, I mean, I just feel so overwhelmed by my anger and upset for them. Can I tell you three ways? Actually, Jesus does in verse 44, and that's all we're doing here, right? We're just kind of walking down through this text. Here's what Jesus says that will help you have that kind of love for that person that's sort of identified in your mind. When they curse you, bless them. You know, instead of cursing them back, you speak good words to them. You speak kind words to them. You intentionally find ways to send a note, say good words. When they do mean things to you, you intentionally find ways to do good things back to them. When they curse you, you bless them. When they do hateful things to you, according to verse 44, you do good things back to them. You shine their boots. When they manipulate and use you, the King James says they despitefully use you, manipulate and use you, Jesus says you should pray for them. Man, it's hard to really dislike somebody that you are really praying for. I mean, it might be easy kind of the first time, but if you say, I'm going to commit to praying for this person, I think you're going to find out that it's hard to really dislike them. C.S. Lewis in his book, Mere Christianity, says this. He says, the rule for all of us is perfectly simple. Do not waste your time bothering whether you love your neighbor. You don't have to worry about that. Just act as if you did. As soon as we do this, we find one of the great secrets. When you're behaving as if you love someone, you will presently come to love him. The worldly man treats certain people kindly because he likes them. The Christian, trying to treat everyone kindly, finds himself liking more and more people as he goes on, including people he could not even have imagined himself liking at the beginning. And I would just say, if there's a whole bunch of people in your world that you don't like, then it probably means that you're not a lot like Jesus. Missionary Sam James, in his autobiography, Servant on the Edge of History, he's kind of telling the story of his missionary life, and he tells about a time as a missionary in Vietnam. He had been in that country for about 10 years, and it had been a struggle for him. And one night, he and his family went to bed, and they woke up to find out that their house had been robbed. A few days later, he found out that his place of work had also been robbed, and he went to the police to tell them about what had happened, and he found out that the police actually were in on both robberies and told him to be quiet about it or else, and they threatened or else something might happen to his family. And Sam says that he was in a taxi not long after that, might have even been the same day. He was driving across town, and the taxi driver kind of leaned back and said to him, "You've been here a long time." And Sam said, "Yeah, we've been here 10 years. He said, "Then you must really love the Vietnamese people." And Sam said, "I looked back to him and I just said, kind of, you know, I just said, yes, I really love them." That evening, he went to bed, but he couldn't sleep. In the wee hours, he rose and knelt beside his sofa, and there he poured out his heart to God through the night. The Lord seemed to say to him, "My son, you are not in Vietnam because you love the Vietnamese people. You are here because I love them. And I want to love them through you." Sam later said that that was the night he really became a missionary. I think there's an important step in realizing and coming to the place where we say that, "God, you're going to have to help me with some of the people in my life, the people that hurt me, the people that use me, that abuse me." So that person that you've had such a hard time, for whatever reason, you just can't stand them, I want you to know that God loves them. And when they've hurt you, and you respond by polishing their boots, there is nothing that you could ever do that will have a greater impact on the soul level of that person as they see you respond to hurt and persecution in that way. So let me ask you, are there lots of people there on your do not like list? Or maybe you call it your do not care for list. You're a little bit nicer. Here's what you should do. Start doing nice things for them. Go out of your way. Think proactively and intentionally. Think in a determination way. How can I do something kind and nice and genuinely loving for this person? You'll find, I guarantee it, you'll find that you'll feel different about them. Now be careful. If I start getting a bunch of people doing nice things for me, I'm going to be really nervous, all right? So be a little careful about that. If the pastors like start being super nice to me, I'm going to start feel funny about that. Let me summarize this whole discussion of last week and this week by asking the question, why? I maybe told you last week that I've really struggled with this and kind of studying through this text. In fact, I wrote it down in big letters on the sides of my notes. Why? It doesn't make sense. What's the reason? What's the purpose that Jesus is, you know, having all this section to try to teach us these things that are so anti-human, personalities? They're against our tendencies. Why? What's the reason? Why would I give my coat to someone who obviously doesn't like me? Why would I carry an unjust load? No, even just 1 mile, but then to take it beyond that. Why would I give to someone when there's a real chance that they will abuse my generosity and they're going to use me? Nobody likes to feel used. Why would I want to give to somebody when I got a pretty good sense that they're going to abuse my generosity to them? In fact, it wasn't really until late in the week, kind of the light bulb started going on. I probably should have seen it earlier because I think Jesus describes for us in verse 45 and 46, the why question. I'm just going to give you a couple things here. Number one, verse 45, here's the reason, because it makes us more like our Father. I mean, how awesome is that? This is one of the ways that Jesus is making you more and more like your Father, because this is how God acts to us. This is how He acts to our world. Verse 45 says, that ye may be the children of your Father, which is in heaven. For He makes His sun to rise on the evil and on the good. I mean, it's not just sunny over those people that are good. It's for everybody. He sends rain on the just and then the unjust. So this makes us more like our Father. Number two, it distinguishes us from the world. 46 says, for if you love them who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the publicans the same? And if you salute your brethren only, then what do you more than anybody else? Do not even the publicans so? If we love those that love us, I mean, everybody does that. It's not hard to be good to those people that are your buddies, people that you like. Big deal about that. Everybody does that. That's not hard. It's when you show kindness to those who are not your friends. Now that's a big deal. And people notice it because it's not natural. And it makes people stop and say, what's different about that person? Why would they respond that way? I saw how that person treated them. Why would they respond like that? Or I know what I did to them. I know what I said to them. And when they responded with my cursing, with blessing, what makes somebody do something like that? I want to look at one other passage this morning. I need you to turn with me to 1 Peter chapter 2. Here's the other really big point that I thought was so helpful in kind of answering this question for me. Why is Jesus calling us to this? In 1 Peter chapter 2, let me read 3 verses in here, and the last phrase is the one that really got me. Verse 20 says this, for what glory is it if, when ye be buffeted for your faults, ye shall take it patiently. All right? If you're persecuted for the things that you did wrong, I mean, what glory is that? I mean, you deserve that. You did wrong. You received the consequences for that. There's no glory in that. But if, when you do well and suffer for it, you take it patiently, this is acceptable with God. Verse 21, for even hereunto were ye called. Listen, there is a very shallow brand of Christianity that says that if you are in the will of God, you are not going to suffer persecution. Everything's going to be good. You're not going to you know, have hard times if you're in the will of God. And I just want to identify, this is not what the Bible teaches. For even unto here ye were called. I have identified you. I have called you for this reason. Doesn't mean that every part of life is going to experience this kind of persecution. No, but listen, that's part of the Christian life. And then it comes back to this question. Well, why? Again, why? For even unto here were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that ye should follow his steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth. I mean, when people persecuted him, he did not curse them. There was no guile in his mouth. He did no sin. He blessed them. Who, when he was reviled, reviled not again. And when he suffered, he threatened not. Listen to this. He committed himself to him that judgeth righteously. Listen, this is the only way that a Christian is able to live out this type of a life. It is because for the Christian, we see life differently. For the Christian, it is not all about the here and now. We know something. We know a secret. And the secret that we know is that there is a life after this. And there's going to come a time when God, the righteous judge, will judge all things righteously. And so I don't need to waste my time. I don't need to waste my energy here on this earth trying to judge myself and judge others righteously. In fact, I'm going to submit to what God's allowed in my life because I know something. And I know that there will be a time and a place when God will make all things right. It's a different worldview. It's a different perspective. So you can abuse me and it may not be fair. My rights might be violated, but that doesn't really matter because my perspective is this. I've quit trying to achieve justice for myself. And I've committed myself to, that's what Peter says, I've committed myself to him that judgeth righteously. You know, we Christians have this crazy idea that it's not all about us. We have this wild belief that it's all about God. And it's all about living out his plan for the world and for us. We have this insane idea that even if the world abuses us, it does not ultimately matter because God is going to make everything right. He's going to restore all things. And at the end, here's the point. It's number three. When we do this, when we live like this, people can't help but notice. And they can't help but wonder. This is what Jesus is calling us to. He's calling us to be salt and light. He's calling us to be different from our world in order that they would say, I don't get it. I don't know why you guys act like that. But there's something about it. There's a courage. There's a strength that compels me to want to know more. This is the call of Christ on our lives. It's a call of Christ to you. I'm going to ask Kelly to come and we're going to close here in just a minute. I just want to conclude kind of this two-part series with you guys by asking this question. Is this how you're living, Christian? Is this your life? How are you treating that person at work that just rubs you the wrong way? Or maybe they've taken advantage of you. Maybe they've spoken badly of you. They've used you. I don't know what it is, but how are you responding to that person? God says, I just want you to act like me. Will you do that? And if you do, and if you'll trust me for the results, I promise that there will come a day when I will make all things right. And in that process, you will be used of me. I'll take your life. I'll take even some of the hard parts and I'll use it in order to impact your world. For some of you this morning, the first step may be for you to just to give your life to Jesus. I want to tell you this morning, I'm not talking about, and I don't think Jesus is teaching us about, just sort of a different moral way of living. We're not here just to talk about, you know, just, hey, let's be better. Let's come together. Let's talk about these things. Let's go and live more morally. This is not it. In fact, if you're not a Christian this morning, you're probably a little bit still confused about this whole conversation that we're having. It might still not make complete sense to you. But even beyond that, if you're not a Christian this morning, and if you were to leave here and you tried to live this out, you're going to have a very, very difficult time. What God wants is He wants to change our hearts. He wants to give us a new life. And then from that life, from that newness of life, He wants to live out a new ethic, a new perspective of our world. And it might be for some that the first step would be, in order to love your enemies, the first step would be to give your heart to Jesus. And I want to invite you this morning to that.